Hey, it's 1:15 here on The Shilling Show. Thanks so much for joining us. David Morata is with us for this hour today. You have read his columns for over 10 years and enjoyed them in the Daily Progress each Monday, and we are pleased to have him back with us here on The Shilling Show. Dave, thanks for coming back to talk to our audience about very important topics.
Thank you so much.
Now, first of all, there is an event coming up from a group called NAPFA, and we want to tell our audience about this because they're invited, aren't they?
Yeah, the NAPFA Consumer Education Foundation is dedicated to educating consumers about personal financial matters. And we run throughout the school year a monthly meeting at the Northside Library. This year we're switching the meeting. It's on this Wednesday night, tomorrow night, from 7 to 8:30. I'm speaking on constructing a truly global modern investment portfolio, but people are encouraged to bring any of their financial questions. There'll be a number of financial advisors there who'll be giving out free advice. There's no charge. It's just one of the services we try to offer to the community.
Terrific. So we invite anybody to go who would like to and bring your financial questions with you. Again, that is tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock at the Northside Library. So please take advantage of that. The economy. This is the most important topic, or should be, for a lot of people, and yet we don't hear a lot about it. Why is that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I took a poll earlier when all of the different candidates were running in the Republican and Democratic primaries, and the poll was intended to determine which candidate was you would support the most. So it had a whole list of issues that you were supposed to answer questions on. Unfortunately, none of the issues I cared about were on there, because all the issues I cared about were economic issues, and I think there was one question, do you want a strong economy? And who would answer no to that? So it was, it's fun to argue about should homosexual couples have the right to partial birth abortions, but that really doesn't affect most people. And people have said in polls that economic issues is their number one priority, and yet no one talks about the real economic issues that affect every American today.
Does this go back to our education system and the lack of economic education in our schools? Is that why people are kind of ambivalent about this?
Well, it's interesting because economics is, I think, especially tax economics, is intended to obscure what's really going on. I think it was France's finance minister under one King Louis that said, the art of taxation consists in so plucking the goose as to obtain the largest possible amount of feathers with the smallest amount of hissing. So lots of little taxes in different ways are intended to gain tax without too much hissing, and it's also intended to do some social engineering. And so people are trying to order their lives not necessarily in what would best benefit them, not necessarily in what would be best for the economy, but what would allow the least amount of taxation. And so it's unfortunate, but as a financial advisor, sometimes I will make more money for my clients through tax management than I will through investment management. And it's not just trying to find tax loopholes. It's simply offering clients, if you do it this way, they're going to tax you. And if you do it this way, then you'll be complying with their social engineering. And is it worth $2,000 to comply with their social engineering? And most often the answer is yes.
You know what I think is interesting? I think that in some ways loopholes have gotten a bad name because, after all, they're legal, and people like to speak about them pejoratively. But, I mean, if it's in the law, it's in the law, and I think people can take advantage of those without feeling too bad about it. Well, the line is open for you right now at 977-1070 if you have a question or comment for Dave Morata. And Gary's on line one. Hey, Gary, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Good afternoon, Rob and Dave. Hope everybody's doing well.
Yes.
Dave, here's my question for you. I'm very concerned when I read the news about the, I guess it's now official, the bailout by the federal government of the two mortgage lending agencies, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And I wondered what your thoughts are on how they're going to handle it. Is that one where they'll issue bonds to cover that transaction? Do you think there's a chance they might monetize the debt to acquire those two agencies?
My guess is that they are going to issue some kind of bonds and support that. It's interesting to me that when a company like Enron goes under, we take people away in handcuffs and we decry it, but we let it go under. This quasi part government agency and part private agency shows, I think, the weakness of trying to have the government interfere with what should be in our banking system a really private matter. If we had private If we privatized all of the things that Freddie and Fannie do, some companies would go others under and others would continue to be strong, and the ones that continued to be strong would have the best policies. So I'm in favor of privatizing that piece, rather than making it completely government run and absorbing it back into the government. It sounds like they're going to try to continue to do the half and half, and I think you can either have sound fiscal policy or you can try to run a charity, but you can't do both.
What would have happened, Dave, if they just let it go and the government said, we're not going to do the bailout? What would have been the practical implications?
Yeah, that's a great question, partial privatization is always causes, I think, bigger concerns than total privatization, because partial privatization builds a bottleneck somewhere else like this, and when that blows up, it's more serious because no one can correct in that area. And so I think they were facing that, and they're still trying to find the long-term solution for Fannie and Freddie. But I think the long-term solution is to move toward privatization in some slow and gentle manner. And I think they were afraid of what would happen if they just let it go under. In truth, if they just let it go under, there's some defaulting on bonds. There's a zero stock for their stock. There's a crisis because no one has yet stepped into those functions within the economy. But ultimately, it's easier to let something go under than it is to bail it out for the next decade.
News Radio 1070 WINA. It is 1:21 here on the Shilling Show, spending a great hour on the policy regarding economics, and we're going to get into some of the various taxes and so forth and how they affect you. And of course, we're taking your calls on line number one. Let us go to John. Hey, John, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Mr. Murata. I wanted to follow up on your previous caller's comment about the bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and I would venture to guess that probably 99% of Americans have absolutely no idea what those institutions are or really what they do or how they were created. There is a really good analysis of their origins and how this entire mess was created by the government at the Division of the Media Research Center, the Business and Media Institute.org website that discusses this in great detail. And although I know that Mr. Marauder, I don't know, are you an attorney as well? I don't know.
I'm not. Back.
Okay. I would be very interested in a discussion not only of the general public's, you know, illiteracy as to what these institutions are and what they do, but also of the constitutional aspect of this as to, I don't understand where in the Constitution it gives the government the authority to either create or to bail out or to saddle the taxpayers with the expense of bailing out an institution of this type or size.
John, it's a great question, and when you said the word Constitution, a big smile flashed across Dave's face. I think he has something to say about this.
Yeah, my daughter is actually in her senior year, and she's in AP government, and so she's going through the Constitution. And what's interesting is we were just studying last night for a Constitution test she had, and one of the things was where in the Constitution are various things found. It turns out that the legislative branch and the executive branch both have what they call elastic clauses, which can be stretched over just about anything that the courts and the legislature and the executive branch want to stretch them over. And one of the elastic is sort of an other functions as needed for the executive branch. And in the legislative branch, there's this commerce clause, which can be applied to everything from migratory birds to lakes they land in. And so the interpretation of the Constitution has broadened in the years through a couple of Supreme Court cases, such that these powers are now recognized as Supreme Court decisions have found them that way. So you're right, the broadening of limited government has made it more unlimited government, and I guess I'm a little bit more of a constitutionalist than most people, and that I think limited government is a better way to go.
Well, I I would submit the following that I think strikes a huge blow to the concept of limited constitutional government, that it came out today through Rasmussen Research that according to their most recent survey, only 29% of Obama supporters believe that judges' rulings should be based on the Constitution.
Uh-oh.
And it is a shocking fact, and given that Rob knows some of the research that I've done into the public literacy and misconceptions concerning the Constitution, that it just seems that these news headlines come out on the front page of USA Today, government taking over these things. It just seems to go by without a whimper. There's no critical analysis. There's no analysis of the constitutionality of it. And of the fact, as you said, that if this was Enron or any private enterprise, they would be marched out en masse in leg irons, whereas the government just seems to have a carte blanche to create debt for the consumer and saddle the taxpayer with this kind of debt when they had nothing to do with the creation of it in the first place.
John, the number that you put forward, the 29% number, was there a corresponding number for McCain supporters?
60%.
Wow. Well, even that's scary that 40% of the McCain supporters wouldn't believe that, but certainly there is a tremendous dichotomy in those figures. John, it's always good to hear from you, and I encourage you to continue to call the show because you really do have a very studied point of view on constitutional issues, and we appreciate your contribution to the Shilling Show.
Well, thanks for taking the call, Rob, and thank you, Mr. Murata.
Thank you. All right, News Radio 1070 WINA. That leaves a line open for you right now at 977-1070. And I guess it kind of goes back to education. We're going to get into the whole issue of specific taxes after the break, but we have about a minute left here, Dave. Is if this many people, McCain supporters, Obama supporters, don't believe that the judges should be bound by the Constitution, what does that mean for the future of the country? I mean, that's a little scary to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. My daughter was reading for her government class Chris Matthews' Hardball,
yes,
which I thought was an interesting choice for a government class to read. One of the things that Chris Matthews says in that book is, my father believed that there were statesmen and there were salesmen, but I think there's just salesmen. And so it's interesting that the whole idea of a statesman, of doing what is best for the people, of having limited government, of having freedoms that are written into the Constitution. Another interesting thing my daughter had to defend was, or she had to ask questions for, should we have a Bill of Rights? They were doing that whole debate. And one said, we don't need them because they're already implied by limited government. And she said, and they said, well, give me an example of a right for which, you know, we wouldn't have, and once was taken away from us. And she rattled off like six or seven different rights that other countries have that we don't. Privacy of correspondence, freedom of education, and it went on and on. Things that the Netherlands, for example, has that we don't. And it is true, because our government was based on limited government, the fact that the Constitution has been interpreted to be unlimited government puts in jeopardy freedoms that are not explicitly written into the Constitution.
And certainly the assumption was at the very beginning that would not be the case, but has morphed over the years. It is 128 here on The Shilling Show. Dave Murata is our guest. You can go to his website at emarotta.com. That's emarotta.com to get more information. We'll be back with more of your calls at 977-1070. Right now we're going to head over to the 24-hour local news center and get you an update. The Shilling Show will be back right after that. All right, 135, it's The Shilling Show. Thanks so much for joining us. We are here weekdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturdays for the Saturday special, The Best of The Shilling Show, 6 to 9 on Saturday morning. We always give you a good reason to wake up early or to switch your lunch hour. 977-1070 is the phone number, and we're continuing for the rest of the hour with Dave Murata. And emurata.com is the website if you'd like to find out more about what Dave does at Murata Asset Management. All right, so we're talking about economic policy and specifically some taxes, and I wanted to get into a couple of things regarding specific taxes. Let's start with capital gains tax. Many people may be listening to us right now who are unfamiliar with capital gains tax because either they don't do their own taxes or they don't own investments on which they would apply. So let's start with a description of what is the capital gains tax.
Yeah, a capital gains tax is when you buy an investment for $100 and it goes up to $200, you have $100 of capital gains. and the capital gains tax currently is at 15%. So capital gains could apply to investments. It could apply to your house. There are some exemptions that you can use for your personal residence. And then starting January 1st, if you own any other houses that you're not living in, the time in which you don't live in them will be subject to capital gains tax. So if you think about it one way, if you have a dollar and you're trying to decide what to do with it, the government is going to tax you more if you invest the dollar than if you spend the dollar. So they're encouraging spending. Spending tax right now is in Virginia 4.5%, and the investment gain tax is at 15%. And there's talk some about trying to raise the capital gains tax to 28%. And if you think about the disaster that would be taxing capital gains at 28%, just imagine this. Imagine you have your investments and they're making 8%. 5% of it is inflation, and 2.25% will be a capital gains tax. So you'll get taxed on your 8%, you'll lose 7.25% of it in inflation and capital gains at a 28% capital gains rate, and you'll make a real return of 0.75%. Well, 0.75% is not enough incentive to put your money in investments. You'd be better off investing in treasury bonds or something like that. And so it will stifle any kind of investment in the United States.
It's scary to think about that, and it's certainly bothersome to me. It has often seemed to me like capital gains tax is double taxation. Do you look at it that way? I mean, someone's already paid taxes on the income and then the investment, and they're getting dinged again.
Yeah, it is. Just because something has appreciated in value should not be cause for taxation. In fact, if you want to be in the highest tax bracket, in the top 1% of tax bracket in the country, all you have to do is sell a house in California.
And you'll be there. Well, speaking of that, this is a little tangential, and it's not really national policy, but the way you described capital gains tax, and then you said, you know, it's not appropriate that you should get taxed just because something appreciates, that is certainly what happens under the Virginia system of real estate taxation. And so I own a home, and the city assessor comes out and says, well, it's worth $50,000 more this year. I'm getting slammed on that tax, even though when I sell the house, I may never realize that because the property could have gone back down again. Is that the same sort of thing?
Yeah, the increase on property taxes due to assessments it really fluctuates a lot more with interest rates than it does with any fair taxation methodology. So it would be better for us to simply have a certain taxation based upon per person to pay for whatever it is we're trying to pay for than it is to tie it to the real estate investments. The other problem is that the state coffers fill when the housing prices go up, and when the housing prices go down, most often than not, they have not saved any of that money for the lean years. And so now state governments all across America are getting hit really hard with tax cuts because they've tied it to real estate taxes.
I would think that in some places like California and Massachusetts, with Proposition 13 and Proposition 2.5 respectively, that they are a little more immune to those problems since their assessments are not based on anything other than the acquisition value of the home.
Yeah, in California, that's a great example of the way in which taxation ends up changing people. People in California are not mobile because they cannot sell a house in one part of the state and buy a house in another part of the state without suffering a huge tax. And so if you're going to sell a house in California, you might as well move to Arizona than to move to anywhere else in the state, because if you move anywhere else in the state, you're going to get hit with thousands of dollars more in taxes. That kind of restriction of the free flow of workers is what communist systems do. They don't allow workers to move from one area to the other in China, because they've locked down all of all restrictions on work. Well, California is doing the same thing, only they're doing it with a tax rate on their real estate.
And I think the solution to that is to let people transfer their basis when they move, as opposed to removing Proposition 13, which I think was one of the greatest things ever done in the state of California as far as allowing people to stay in their homes.
Yep.
But we've gotten off the topic of capital gains tax here. So what's the history of the capital gains tax, and why was this ever envisioned, and how long has it been around?
That's a great question. I don't know the full history behind the capital gains tax.
What is the recent history of the capital gains tax, and where have rates gone on it in recent years?
Yeah, rates have come down to 15, which actually is what has helped more of the investment and encouragement. They are slated to drop to 5%, I think, this year for the lowest income tax brackets. And the real question is, why have a capital gains tax at all? The rate should be zero, according to what most economists would say, provides the best free flow of capital to various places. If you think about it, if I've invested in one thing and I could make more money and have more economic growth by investing in something else, the capital gains tax restricts me from taking my money from one investment and moving it into another investment, even if that would provide a boon in the economy. And so I have to leave it in the one investment, because if I sell it, I'll pay capital gains tax because I'll be realizing some kind of gain. Why not let me realize that gain and go put it someplace where it will earn more money?
So why is it that so few people in Washington get this? And is there anybody that you're aware of on the national political scene that is making a movement to change this and perhaps eliminate capital gains taxes?
Yeah, I think all of the candidates early in the primaries who wanted to eliminate capital gains were eliminated from running pretty quick. If you'll notice, anyone with any economic background or economic expertise is pretty much eliminated soon in the primaries, because most of the political issues are not how much you know about economics and how good your ideas are, but they're more about how well you can speak and present yourself and inspire people.
And how much are you going to give somebody? And we see a lot of the people with their hands out that respond very well to those sorts of political promises these days. So does it look like we're going to have a change? We know Obama has talked about increasing it. What has been the McCain proposal for capital gains, or does he have any?
I think McCain's proposal is to leave the tax cuts, make them permanent. It will leave the rate at 15%, which is not ideal, but it's certainly better than 28%. And so in that regard, McCain, who doesn't know that much about economics, at least is doing less harm, which I think is the first principle of government, is do less harm.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that for somebody who at least has some understanding, even if they're not an expert in economics, as McCain has stated about himself, that he probably or hopefully is intelligent enough to surround himself with people who are experts in economic policy who could help him with something like this. Has this been the history in the past with presidents who did not have a good grip on economics? Can you think of some recent examples where they had a real good economic advisor?
I think Reagan relied quite a lot on the economic advisors around him. A lot of them came from a great background, and they had a chance to put tax cuts into effect. And he learned, I think, too, from the Kennedy tax cuts, which I think Kennedy's tax cuts is the best example of how tax cuts shouldn't be a partisan issue. Kennedy has the most eloquent articulation of why a tax cut for the rich is the best thing for the economy.
And it's forgotten history, and many people, I think, have forgotten that Kennedy instituted those tax cuts. So what would happen in America if a real maverick came in and just eliminated the capital gains tax rate? What would happen?
I think a couple of resulting things would happen. First, the economic boom from reinvestment, because if you lower the tax on investment, you'll get more investment. And so there would be more people who would say, hey, at the marginal rate of return I can get with a capital gains tax, it's not worth taking the risk. Now it's worth taking the risk, and you'll have more people investing in ventures that will build infrastructure, new businesses, and therefore help the economy by developing small businesses, which is the engine of economic growth in America. Most of the economic growth in America comes from small business ventures. People who have a great idea, start a company, then they need some help, they start hiring, unemployment goes down, they do something better, which means efficiencies go up, they can produce stuff for a lower cost. And so lowering the capital gains tax would encourage that kind of investment. The second thing it would do is, if you eliminate the capital gains tax, then more people could move their money from a venture that's not working well to a venture that can work better. And so you'd have a more flexible economy able to adapt to the changing environment in America that we need to compete with the global economy.
I'm just flummoxed after hearing this, and it makes all the sense in the world as to why we can't get it done. What is the roadblock in the way of making such a change?
Yeah, the question is how you view capital gains. The capital gains tax has always been viewed as, I don't know how to put it, but a punitive tax on those rich investors mm-hmm. who have lots of money in the markets. When the capital gains tax was first instituted, I would say the majority of America probably didn't have any investments. Now the majority of America has investments, and we still have this tax. And so I think its time has come for it to go away.
Well, we can only hope, and certainly that was a good 15-minute or so dissertation on the topic. Dave Morata is our guest. He is the president of Morata Wealth Management. You can check out his website at emorata.com. We're going to head into the final segment and talk about the top marginal tax rate. And you are welcome to join us at 977-1070 right here on The Shilling Show and right after this. Hey, it's 1:49 here on The Shilling Show. And thank you so much for joining us. Dave Morata is our guest, and we're heading into the final segment. We've got a couple of callers on the line. Let's head over to line one. And Tom, thanks so much for calling The Shilling Show.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you for some very enlightening conversation. I always find it stimulating when we go into some detail and try to reveal the various ways that, if you'll forgive my radical nature, the government steals opportunity and money from its citizenry.
Yes, I agree with you.
Well, you've hit on quite a few of them. May I add another? I find it fascinating that we talk about capital gains, and one of the great advantages of capital gains stimulating the economy is the lower tax rate for capital gains on long-term investments at 15%, and yet we persuade so many Americans to take the capital gains tax rate that they would have enjoyed in an investment in a stock and put it into their IRA and 401k where it's taxed ordinary tax rates. We just doubled our taxes by deferring them.
Tom, you hit on one of the ways in which our firm brings tax management in addition to asset management. We recommend a nice balanced portfolio, but we don't put the same investments in the same types of accounts. So we put all of the bond holdings in the traditional IRAs where they're going to be taxed at ordinary income tax rates. Interest on bond investments are going to be taxed at ordinary income tax rates. We take all of the equity investments, we put those that are liable to grow at the greatest rate in a Roth IRA where they'll never be taxed. We take all the foreign tax investments and we put them into a taxable account because you can take the foreign tax paid off on your tax return. And we take all the equity investments and put them in a taxable account where they're only taxed at a 15% rate. Why should that be such a huge gain? And I have talked to many, many, many investors, and very few people know that you can get an extra percent on your returns simply by putting the right kind of investments in the right kind of investment vehicles because of the tax incentives that our government has put into place.
I'm not surprised, Dave, that you have an expertise to understand that and to persuade your clients to do the right thing, but so many millions of Americans do not understand it.
It's true, and if you think about it, the Americans who don't understand the tax system are being taxed with a greater tax burden than those who take the time to learn all of this esoteric code.
That's why I enjoy listening to you guys. Great job.
Tom, thanks very much for the phone call, and that will leave a line open for you right now at 977-1070. Spencer's on line, too. Hey, Spencer, you're on The Shilling Show with Dave Morata.
Thanks, Rob. Great show. Dave, just wanted to see what you might think about Charlottesville as far as a bond-issuing municipality and if it's a good time to buy Charlottesville bonds. I do know that they're scheduled to the city's scheduled to defend itself in court tomorrow, and I just wondered what you thought about the bond rating. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, Spencer, thanks for the call. All the way from Florida, by the way.
That's a great question. I don't know the specifics of Charlottesville's bonds. I assume that they are long-term bonds.
Yes.
Probably, yeah, 10 to 20 to 30 years. Right now, I think interest rates are at a relative low. And so long-term bonds would not be very attractive as they will adjust downward as the interest rates rise. So short-term bonds, even money market at this point, will adjust faster than a long-term bond will. So I don't have anything against Charlottesville and their bond rating. I just think long-term bonds are a lot riskier. And if you're going to take that kind of risk, I think there's more to be made in the equity markets.
All right, Spencer, thank you very much for the call. 977-1070 is the phone number if you want to get in here with Dave Marotta at the last few minutes of our conversation. So I saw some really interesting numbers here, and Neil Bortz, who appears on WINA mornings from 10 until 1, precedes this show, had come up with some numbers, and I'd like to get your response to this. He says, in 2004, the top 1% of all income earners earned about 19% of all income. And then he goes on to say, during the time Clinton was in office, this figure went from 13.8% to 21%. He later goes on to say, in 2004, the top 1% of income earners, that was the crowd that earned 19% of all income, paid 36.9% of all income taxes, and the top 5% of all income earners paid 57.1% of all income taxes. So I guess the question, and I threw a lot of numbers at you, and I'll hand you a printed sheet here, but the question I would have for you is, there's so many people, including Barack Obama, who says, well, you know, we want to give a cut to 95% of the taxpayers, but it sounds to me like the top 1% and the top 5% are paying the monster share of taxes already.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everyone says that tax cuts for the rich are a bad idea, and yet every single time tax cuts for the rich has been implemented, the rich has end up paying a greater percentage of total taxes, which is counterintuitive, but it actually makes sense if you think about it, and that is if you free up that portion of the economy which is the most productive and make it even more productive, you will collect more in taxes. It's funny that everyone now looks back and most people think, well, gosh, Reagan was awful and all those tax cuts were awful, but Reagan reduced the top marginal tax rate from 70% down to 50%. I can't find anyone today who says that 70% was a good idea, and yet people rail on Reagan as only being interested in tax cuts for the rich. It was JFK who first reduced the top marginal rate, and I love the quotes from JFK because Democrats love JFK. I love JFK. He's the most supply side economics than certainly Richard Nixon was, who put in wage and price controls. But this is a quote from JFK. It's a paradoxical truth that tax rates are too high today and tax revenues are too low, and the soundest way to raise the revenues in the long run is to cut tax rates.
Wow.
And then he goes on to say, an economy hampered by restrictive tax rates will never produce enough revenues to balance our budget, just as it will never produce enough profits or jobs. JFK advised the best means to grow the economy is, quote, is to reduce the burden on private income and the deterrence to private initiative, which are imposed by our present tax system. And this administration has pledged itself to an across-the-board, top-to-bottom cut in personal and corporate tax incomes.
JFK, where are you now when we need you or somebody like you? And it's amazing how in just a generation or so, we have completely lost touch with the Reagan philosophy, the JFK philosophy, and everything has changed. Dave Marotta, thank you so much for joining us here today. We only really covered one of the areas that we meant to, but there's always next month. Thank you for being with us today, and we do encourage you to check out emarotta.com if you want to get some more information on what Dave is doing. And also the NAPFA Consumer Education Foundation meeting, which is tomorrow evening. That's September 10th, 7 o'clock to 8:30 p.m. over at the Northside Library, free and open to the public, and you will certainly have the opportunity to have all of your questions answered. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us here today on The Shilling Show. It's always a great day when Dave Marotta visits us. Tomorrow, I want to let you know that we're going to be talking with the Foundation.